Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Everyone Has a Story. My guest today was a former drug dealer, but today he is healing broken lives. Listen to his story about growing up, tragedy, drug dealing, and losing the love of his life and finding love again, and how he's affecting his community today. In this episode, I call From Dealer to Life Healer. I am here with a very good friend of mine, special friend, Bishop Pastor Doug Young of Los Banos, California. And today I get the chance to sit down with him and we're going to just talk about some things. He's got a very interesting life. Some of the things that he's done in his life, been part of, and pastoring out there in the Central Valley of California. And what's amazing is you can't imagine where he grew up and how to end up where he ended up. That's a story in itself. But anyway, man, how are you? Pastor Doug, my brother, big brother, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. Feeling good. Excited about talking with you today and sharing just some of the great things that's happened and how God is always faithful.
Amen. Well, as we get started, tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how you grew up and, you know, all that, so the audience can kind of get an idea of who you are.
I grew up in a little small town in southeast, southwest, actually, Louisiana. And so our little town had wasn't even really a city, still not a city. It's just an area. Has a caution light, so pretty much just slow down. It's all you got to do when you come through town. And one of the biggest things there is the church. And I grew up in a very rural setting. Grew up hunting and fishing. And my dad always always grew a garden and grew so much stuff that he'd give to all the neighbors and friends, family. And I was his workforce, so child labor, yeah. So I grew up working hard, cows to milk and gardens to work and firewood to chop for the winter and hunting and fishing. It was a great, great way to grow up, and what a blessing. And I don't regret any of it. I mean, while I was young, I couldn't wait to get off the farm. Used to swear if I ever left that place, I'd never grow anything again because it was so much work. And but every year about springtime I get the itch to plant something, so I still to today grow a little small garden in my backyard. And
funny you say that, considering area. Yeah, it's funny you say that considering you live in Central Valley where they grow all of our vegetables for the
year. All around it.
Yeah, and I know you cook a mean gumbo too, huh? You know, you do a little cooking out there.
Oh, absolutely. I love to cook. In fact, I made a big shrimp, shrimp and sausage and chicken gumbo this weekend. Man. And had a lot of the team from the church over, and we enjoyed that Sunday evening. And it takes a little bit to do that. It's about a 6-hour cook. Time you cook all the roux and get everything just right. And
it was good when I was out there, man. I enjoyed that. I think I had like 2-3 bowls of that.
Well, that big pot I had it, same thing. And it, by the time we left, it wasn't much left. Our crew here sure knocked it out pretty good.
So you grew up down there, and so it was good. And so how, what else, as you grew up, what did you end up doing? How'd you get out of, you know, most people don't really leave home that far, but you ended up from Southwest Louisiana down to, or out there in California. And I mean, I know there's a whole lot of things in between that, but.
I've always been someone my gifting, my calling first is evangelist. I just tell you a little bit about how it all started. I got saved when I was 6. My mother, she was praying that I would come to the Lord and know the Lord before I went to school, first grade. And so she would not give up, and they kept getting closer to time for school to start, and they would take me to revival meetings all that week and 2-3 weeks before school started. They were every meeting anywhere near our area, she was taking me, hoping that it would happen. It didn't happen. And so we went to church that Sunday morning in church, and then Sunday night service, it didn't happen. And so she just had been praying really hard that I would come to know the Lord and give my heart to Jesus. And that night I went to go to bed, and she was like, Lord, she was kind of puzzled that it didn't happen. She didn't say this to me at the time, because I was just a little kid, but she was told me later about it. And that night I couldn't go to sleep. I kept crying, and my dad would come check on me and say, hey, you sick, you know, thirsty, hungry, you know, why are you crying? I'm like, I don't know why I'm crying. I'm just crying. I don't know what's wrong. And my mother, she went, oh, I know what's wrong. And so we all went and knelt at our couch in our living room, and my mom and dad led me to Jesus right there. And then the next Thursday I got baptized. And so I started school saved and following Jesus in first grade. And when I was 12, I felt the call to the ministry.
Wow.
Thought I would start preaching like immediately. And we lived in a culture in that time where that was something you didn't tell anybody. Somebody else had to recognize the call of God on your life. And so I wouldn't tell anybody. I preached my first sermon at youth service when I was 14. And then life took a big turn for me. My dad and mom ended up divorcing. By the time I graduated high school, they were in the middle of a divorce. So I left home just to get away from all the chaos of the tension of the divorce. So I left home after I graduated at 17. I was working and roomed with one of the guys I worked with. He didn't serve the Lord. And so all the influences of the world was suddenly thrust upon me, where I'd been super sheltered. My life was very sheltered. I was like a little lamb among wolves. But my life went off the rails. I just stopped going to church, stopped serving the Lord. And for the next 2.5-3 years, I was a mess. I got involved in drugs and a lot of partying and just kind of lost my way. But never could get away from the calling. There'd be times that we'd be partying all night with my friends, and I'd just start crying and just say, what am I doing here? I'm not supposed to be here. I'm called to the ministry. I don't know why. And they would all laugh like, you called to the ministry. You're a knothead. No, you're because I'd moved in with another roommate, and it actually was a drug dealer, and I started using drugs and cocaine and dealing cocaine. And for him, it takes some crazy risk. And, I would be the one that would go out at night in a nightclub and have 4 or 5 grams of cocaine in my pocket and walk into the club and make the rounds and sell, make the deals inside the club. This is the 80s, so things were crazy. And so...
Before we go on, let me ask you some, you went from, being sheltered and, going to church and everything. What do you think pushed you where, you went from, a church going good boy, all of a sudden now you're dealing cocaine. What do you think were, how did that happen? How does, that happen, you think?
Well, I think the breakdown of my family had a lot to do with it.
The divorce.
Because I didn't, my dad was, raised me in the church, and he sat on the second row, and my mom, we all sat there. I mean, we were all involved. My dad would go to 5 o'clock prayer meeting before he'd go to work.
Wow.
And I'd go with him. And many times I would stay at the church till school started. And that's really how I really got to learn to preach, because I'd preach to the empty pews. Everybody would leave, and I'd have 2 hours or 3 hours before school started. And I could just walk from church to school, because we were out of the woods and into the little town. And the school was just a few blocks away. And so they'd leave me at the church. In fact, I had as a teenager, I had a key to the church because I'd lock up when I left and there'd be nobody there. And I'd preach to the empty pews, stand behind the pulpit because nobody could tell me not to.
Wow.
Because the church was empty, and I got a lot of pews saved. I mean, those pews came to know Jesus, I'm telling you. But I do believe it was the breakdown of my family unit. It was quite devastating, even though I was older when it actually happened. I began to see the stress in the marriage when I was about 15. When I was 16, my dad told me, you know what, I'm going to leave your mom. And I begged him not to leave until I graduated school. And he actually honored that. He stayed another year and then left my mom. And, you know, he had an affair, and it was quite devastating to me. And I really just kind of turned on love. To be honest with you, I had this saying at that time was, if they couldn't make it, love didn't exist. And it was all just an illusion. In fact, even during that time, I would date a girl until she'd say she loved me, and I'd dump her. I would not date her again if she said she loved me, because it didn't exist. And so just, it was a lot of pain. I didn't know how to handle it, didn't know what to do with it. And so I believe with the influences of my friends being that they were in the world and in the lifestyle of partying and drugging, it was just kind of a path of least resistance. And it was kind of there was a self-destructive part. Like, you know, there were times that I remember during that time driving, partying so hard that I would wake up in the morning and go look outside to see if my car was there. And I drove home. Mm. Didn't know how I'd gotten home. Wow. That kind of like blackout kind of stuff. And it was just a crazy time. It's a wonder I didn't die. It was only the mercy of God that I didn't get killed or die. And
prison, you were dealing with.
Go to prison. In fact, if you want me to tell that part of the story, how I came back to the Lord is an amazing miracle. I believe God rescued me. It was a powerful time. I just hit the bottom. I'd wrecked my car, driving intoxicated, tore it all up in my truck. I had an El Camino, 77 El Camino Super Sport Classic. It was I wish I had it today.
Yeah, it'd be worth a lot of money. It's worth the money now.
It was gorgeous, and I'd wrecked it and bent the frame, and it was just a mess. And so I didn't have any wheels, and my dad had got me in the IBEW union, so I was going to school for that kind of halfway. I didn't really want to do it. Going to school to be an electrician like he was. And I didn't show up half the time to class, and couldn't, at that time there wasn't a lot of work, so I wasn't really working very much. So I was really dealing drugs so I could afford my habit, and dealing cocaine. And I'd been just beaten down. I was been about 3 weeks. We didn't have any food. All we had was a huge bag of popcorn, and I ate popcorn every day for about 3 weeks.
Oh my.
And but when you're using cocaine, you're not that hungry anyway. So, and I'd lost so much weight, and it was one of those nights we'd been out and had a big party, and I'd gotten in a fight at a club, and it was, you know, I had two black eyes, and we all went to an after party after the club closed, and it was probably 10 or 15 people in the house, and everybody's partying and passing out, and, you know, kind of bodies thrown everywhere at different states of awareness. And I looked around. I'm like, what am I doing here? I'm tired of this. These are not my friends. And so I literally walked out the front door as soon as it got daylight and started walking. And this is, I was in Texas.
Okay.
I was in Beaumont, Texas, and I started walking toward Louisiana. I said, I'm going home to see my mother. And I walked for probably 20 or so miles, and a little pickup truck pulled over. And it was a Baptist minister. And I imagine, Black Sabbath t-shirt on. I had a big old long feather earring because that was in style. And my hair was past my shoulder. And I wouldn't have picked me up. Be honest with you, I wouldn't have picked me up. And he pulled over and he said, boy, where are you going? I said, I'm headed to Louisiana. He said, I am too. You need to ride? Wow. I said, I sure could. He picked me up and I told him where I was going, and he took me all the way to my mom's driveway and dropped me off.
Wow.
And I didn't know this at the time. I found out later. My mom had been praying for me, and she went on a 29-day fast. It was, actually, she told the Lord, I'm not going to eat another meal until you save my boy. And at 29 days, I found out later, the Lord spoke to her when she was praying and said, it is done. And she broke her fast on the 29th day.
Wow. That's so story.
That morning, she looked up. She said she was washing dishes. She looked up and saw me coming down the driveway, almost like the prodigal son coming home.
Man.
And she greeted me with a hug and welcomed me home and began to cook for me, made me a meal. And I was just broken. I didn't let her know that. I was all, tough and had my front up, like everything was cool. I just wanted to come see her. I hadn't seen her in months, probably 3 or 4 months.
Hmm.
And so she said, well, why don't you stay? And I went, yeah, I guess I'll stay. I didn't have anywhere to go. And so I stayed the night, and this is Saturday night. And the next morning she said, you want to go to church with me? And I thought, out of respect, I probably should, just make her happy. Go to church.
Go to church with mama.
So I went to church with mom, and the pastor greeted me at the front door. I didn't know him, never met him before. He walked up and he said, oh, we've been praying for you. You're Patricia's boy.
Wow.
And it was just like,
oh man.
Wow, they've been praying for me. They just greeted me like.
Let me ask you though, did you go to church with your Black Sabbath t-shirt on? That's all.
No, I didn't.
How about the earring? How about the feather earring?
No, I took it out. I took the earring out too, man.
You had the long hair though.
I still had the long hair. And so that day he preached and it was good. They welcomed me and they just treated me like I belonged there. Like they'd been waiting on me. That's what it made me feel like. And so I just kind of sit looking real tough during church and went home. We ate and mom said, you want to go back tonight? And I said, I don't know. I have a lot of things to do. I didn't. I had nowhere to go. Had nothing to do. And one of my friends, because I was back in the town I grew up in, and one of my friends came by and said, oh, man, I heard you were at your mom's house. Came by to say hello. I said, oh, that's cool, man. Good to see you. And they said, did you hear what happened in Beaumont? It was a big drug bust. Mm. I found out later that they had raided my roommate, the guy that I was a roommate. They had raided, they'd been watching our little organization. The police had been watching it. They busted all of them. They all went to jail. God had removed me out of that just at the right time.
That's so powerful.
In fact, when I went back to get my stuff from his house, he was like, where you been? Like, he thought maybe I'd been the one that ratted him out. I didn't. It wasn't that at all. And when I told him, I said, no, it wasn't me. And I told him, I just gave my heart to Jesus. So that Sunday night, I was pretty shook up from finding out that they had raided our, the house, and that all my friends had gone to jail. So I was pretty tore up and scared.
Sure.
So that night the pastor preached, and I went back to church with mom, and the pastor preached, and man, he preached and he preached and he preached. I'd already decided if he'll just stop preaching, I'll go to the altar.
He was that bad, huh?
I was waiting on him to hurry up and get done.
That bad.
I already decided I needed God, and the religious background I grew up in, I felt like I'd done so much, I didn't think God would accept me back. I didn't even know if he would. And I finally, sitting back there on that back row, I just said, Lord, I don't know if you can even hear me.
Wow.
And if you can't, I need help. I need help. And so as soon as he gave the altar call, I was bolting to the altar.
Hmm.
And man, God just so overwhelmed me with his presence, and I recommitted my life to him, and he set me free that night.
That's unbelievable.
And he delivered me. I remember going to the bathroom after the service, and my eyes were all puffy from crying, And I looked in the mirror and I had this long hair and I'm like, who are you? Like, it was like I was seeing myself for the first time again. I was blown away, like, who is this guy staring back at me? And what has happened? And
from so that was that. From you dealing and, you know, all that happened to the moment you came back to the Lord, how long was that time? What was the?
It was about 3 years.
Three full years.
So I'm 20 now and just trying to figure out what's next.
Sure.
And so I was so passionate for God. In fact, I went back to get my stuff from the house where I was living, and my roommates started questioning me about, like, where you been? What's, you know, we all went to jail, and, you know, did you rat on us? And I was like, no, it wasn't me. I told him, I said, you know, I was just done with it. And I gave my heart to Jesus, and I'm saved, and I'm done with the drugs and the lie. He said, there's no way. He said, everything that you were doing, there's no way you just quit that. You have to get rehab or something. I said, no, I'm seriously. And it had been like 3 weeks. So 3 weeks later, I go back to get my stuff. And look, my mom was with me, and we loaded it all up in her car and took it to her house. It wasn't a whole lot anyway. And he said, there's no way. But finally, when it was over, he just gave me a big hug and said, you know what? I'm really glad this happened for you. He said, because you were on a path of destruction, and I didn't really think you'd live much longer the way you were going, the way you were living. I don't know how you just quit doing all that at once, but I'm really proud for you, and I hope it all works out. I loaded everything up, and I had never seen him again since then. Never saw him again. But I went home, and I started going to every church service possible. And, you know, everybody would go out after service. I'd stay and pray, seeking the Lord. I didn't know what was next. And we had some students from Bible college in Houston come over to do a service, and they were there recruiting students for the Bible college. And when I heard about it, I thought, man, I want to go check this out. And they invited me to come and visit. It was an open house day, and I went to Houston, and I came back home. That I said, this is what I feel like I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to go to Bible college. And so this is summer. I had a few months before school started, so I put in my application to go, and then I went to summer camps that actually worked summer camps that summer as a dormitory. You're in service every day, you know, I oversaw the dormitories. So we were in church service, revival, summer camp, Texas summer camp. So we were there every day in church and preaching, and man, I sat on the front row and just was like a sponge absorbing everything.
You're on fire, as they say.
On fire for God. And so that fall, 1984, I packed up, still didn't have the money to go. Didn't have the money to go to school. And my old truck was tore up because of my El Camino, because I wrecked it. It would burn a tire up every 3 weeks. So I would buy a retread and put back on there. And so one of the other guys from church was going, and so the school as well. And so I left my mother's house, and I didn't have any money, and I went to pick him up. I'd loaded everything that I owned up to go to college in my little truck. Went by to pick him up, and I just told the Lord, I said, Lord, if you're gonna have to make a way, I'll go get a job, I'll work, I'll do whatever. I know this is what I need to do. And when I drove by to pick him up, we packed his stuff in my truck, and his mother came out. And
all right, we're back.
Sorry about that.
No problem. I can cut that out. Go ahead. I'm recording. So you packed up everything, went to Bible college.
Well, we came out of the house, and she just reached in her pocket and pulled out a check.
Wow.
And she said, the Lord spoke to me to give this to you, and it was for my tuition for the first year. And so by the time I got to Houston, I had I left not having anything, just walking by faith. Lord, you're going to have to provide. And by the time I got to Houston, I had the tuition in my hand. I just walked in and handed the check.
Wow.
And started Bible college in 1984. And I graduated 1987 from Texas Bible College in Houston.
Wow, you're a smart guy. Graduated in 3 years. Most of us take more than that. Man, that's great. And so you lived in Houston for a while, where I'm at. So
yeah,
how many years was that? And that, now tell me, how'd you end up in California?
California. So after college, my first job was at Christian Tabernacle back then. It's now Dr. Richard Hurd is there as the senior pastor, but that was my first job working on staff there. They hired me right out of college.
Doing what? And
I was it was wild because I've always been hung. My passion is reaching people who don't know Jesus. And so I was working as a security guard at night, going to school during the day,
right?
And during college, and I started just sharing Jesus with everybody that I met. So anybody I talked to, I'd share Jesus with. And I began to talk to one of my coworkers who was a law student at Baylor University, and I would stay late after. And he would relieve me. And so I would stay and we would talk about the Lord. And he wasn't interested in the Lord. He was at college and having his fun days and chasing girls and partying. And I began to share Jesus with him. And I'd fasted and prayed for him. And the Lord radically saved him. And that's a whole story by itself, but I'll maybe for another day. But he got saved, and within 2 to 3 weeks, I had two rows of college students sitting beside me at church. All of them got saved. It was just a revival broke out on Baylor University. And so The pastor noticed me, like, who's this kid bringing all these college students? And he noticed me and asked me, he hired me, gave me a job as an outreach minister on staff. And so I would follow up with first time guests and I would teach Bible studies. And that was my job, my first job after college. I ended up marrying his daughter.
Okay.
Which happened along the way. That's another whole story. But so, so one of the pastors I'd met there at the church while I was on staff was from California. He'd come to visit and preach. Well, we stayed in touch. And so, one day in a staff meeting, the senior pastor said, all of the staff members, he said, I want you to take a piece of paper out and write down what you, if you had the support of your friends and family and you had unlimited resources, what would you be doing for Christ? And it was not even a hesitation. I wrote it down immediately. And that was, I would be an evangelist. I wanted to travel from church to church and preach to the unchurched and see people get saved. And so I wrote that down on the piece of paper. And within 3 weeks, I was in California as an evangelist.
Wow.
So I packed everything up and drove to California. The man that was out here was my great friend, Pastor Dave Theobald in Pleasanton. He pastored New Life Church there on Hop Yard Road in Pleasanton, California. He took me in and he shared me with all of his friends and just said, you know, here's a young kid wants to preach, have him at church. And so I began to preach at different churches and travel California. This is 1988. And so after I'd done that for a year, I came back to Houston to get married in 89 and married my wife. And we started a little home church, her and her brother and I. Started a little home church and moved from there to a hotel, and then later bought a building. And at some point in about year two, he moved to Florida and left me as the pastor. He called me one day and said, I'm moving to Florida, you're the new pastor. That's my first pastorate. And I had to ask the Lord, I don't know how to be a pastor, I'm an evangelist. Right, reached unsaved people. So I asked the Lord to give me the gift of a shepherd, you know, teach me how to pastor. And so I was there total 4 years. And we had a baby girl born during that time. And in 1994, we did a survey. It was actually 93. We did a survey of the area. This was in, the church was located actually in Pasadena, Texas. We did a survey of the area. We did a call around, like we did thousands of calls. And it was just, we had a little questionnaire that you'd go by and we'd ask questions, you know, are you church? Are you a member of a church? You know, that kind of thing. We were just doing, trying to feel out where we were and what we needed to do. Well, when we got that result, 80% of the people we interviewed were either churched already or they considered themselves a member of a church. And so about 3 weeks later, I gave my resignation, told the church I had my own business at the time, told the church that I was resigning. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I wanted to be somewhere where people needed Jesus. I didn't know where I was going to go. That process was about 6 months of waiting. And one of the guys I preached for back in 1988 called me one day and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I don't know. I'm just praying and seeking the Lord. I've gone to Little Rock, Arkansas and prayed. I've gone to Atlanta and prayed about going there to start a new home church. And I didn't know what I was going to do." I said, "I'm just praying and waiting on the Lord." He said, "Well, there's a little church in Los Banos, California that needs a pastor. They lost their pastor and they've got an interim pastor right now, but there's 18 people that have a building. It's out in the middle of the agriculture part of California." And I thought, "Lost where? Los Banos? Where is that?" Heard of Los Angeles.
You know, right.
Who it was. So he
said, "I didn't know where it was, but you told me there, man." I was like, "Where?" Right.
And so I called the interim pastor and I said, "I heard you're looking for a pastor there." And he goes, "Oh yeah, I need somebody. I'm leaving in 4 months. I have to go take another church." And I said, "Well, we want to come out and see." He said, "Well, we can't afford to pay your way. You know, if you can afford to buy your own plane tickets, and come on." And so we did. We bought our own plane tickets and flew out to California. My wife and my brand new little baby, she was about a year old at the time, and preached and met with the people, and they were really broken up. Their pastor had left and the church had dwindled down to only 18 people. And so we put our name in, said, "Yes, we'll come move to California and take the church." And I flew home and put a for sale sign in my yard to sell my house. Nothing was selling at the time. And they called me the next week and said, "We voted and you're our new pastor. When can you be here?" And in three weeks, I sold everything I had, all of my equipment, closed my company, sold off all my equipment, sold my cars, sold everything we had, our house sold, which was amazing because nothing was selling at the time. And in 3 weeks, I had moved to California. I was the new pastor. And I've been here now. 18 people, boy. We were going to take the world by storm.
You know, I just can't imagine the faith that it takes to, you know, especially when you have a 1-year-old. You know, here you got a wife, a 1-year-old daughter, and you know, you had a business and a home, and then you're moving across the country, basically from Houston down up there to or to Los Banos with 18 people. Boy, that's exciting, man. That every man wants to do that. I mean, you know, 1,800 people maybe, but 18. Boy, that takes faith. So, did it feel right? You know, there's sometimes I hear stories of people, and it didn't matter to them when they walked into the place. They just knew this was where it was meant to be. Did that feel like that for you?
It felt like that. And then Billy Graham had done a big crusade in the Central Valley.
Oh, okay.
And the results of his survey that he did was that 96% was unchurched.
Hmm.
And when I heard that, I went, that's where I want to be. I want to be where people don't know Christ.
Right.
So
right.
I want to reach the unchurched. I want to reach people who don't know Jesus. And that has been our goal. Even though I was pastor and I'm still an evangelist at heart, and there's nothing that makes me happier than to see somebody give their life to Jesus and watch God radically change their life. It is the most beautiful thing. And I've been here now 27 years, and I look across the congregation and there's story after story. People that came to Christ, their marriages were blowing up. I have one lady, in fact, I just did her mom's funeral this week, and her mom came first. So she was with me for 26 years. She just passed away last week. Faithful, love the Lord. She came to Christ early on, and when I got here, and brought her daughter in. Her daughter walks in. She's a welfare mom of two children with no daddies, two different daddies.
Wow.
Drugs, strung out on drugs.
The day she came down to church.
Pardon? She'd been partying the night before. She came in her pajamas to church.
To church.
Yeah. And, you know, the way she says it is that she never felt so welcomed as bad. But, you know, my mind went back to the day I walked in that way.
Right.
Busted and broken. My life in tatters. Not knowing what I was going to do next. And a pastor walked up to me. The first thing out of his mouth was, "Man, I'm so glad you're here. We've been praying for you." And it felt like they were waiting on me. And so that's been my heart, is to make sure that every person that walks through those doors, that they know we've been waiting on them. We've been praying for them. And so I look now, this young lady, we encouraged her to go back to school and get her GED once she got off drugs, and God radically changed her life, set her free, filled with the Holy Spirit and power. She got off drugs. She goes back to school, gets her GED, goes to college and gets her degree. She now works for the college. Merced College. She works for Merced College now as administrative staff.
Okay.
She married the father of one of her children.
Okay.
Married him. He had gotten saved. He moved over and started coming to our church. He went and got his education and now works for the school.
Wow.
And they bought a home probably about 5 or 6 years ago, a beautiful home. Their lives, you know, their lives are totally different because of Jesus.
Amen.
And they're part of our staff. They've gone through our little Bible college that we do here, and we just ordained them into ministry a few weeks ago. And you were here for that. I was so glad you got to come.
Yes.
What a powerful story. I mean, when I look around, there's story after story. I look across the congregation, one story after another, of just how much difference God can make, that He truly can set you free.
You know, it's funny because when we were, when I was thinking about doing this, you know, interview with you or podcast with you, even before, and I've known some of these stories that you shared, especially your life, you know, it's amazing because here you're a man that went from dealing, or, you know, a dealer, a cocaine dealer, to now leading people, you know, who has brokenness, drug addiction, whatever, and now their lives are being healed. I mean, you went from being a drug dealer to a life healer. I mean, that's you know, I just can't get over that title. It's just stuck in my brain that you led people, you know, you know, because being a drug dealer, people come to you, right? I mean, those people right. that are broken, I'm sure, and they're needing something to get their mind, or, you know, I mean, I've never done drugs. I've dealt with a lot of people, you know, I've
spoken to people that have done drugs, or even people, I've never been addicted to alcohol. I've never smoked. It's just because it, as a child, I've seen drunkenness, you know, I've seen it, and I've seen it in a way where it gave me nightmares, you know. What I recognized was that people did that to suppress pain, you know, get their mind off, right? I mean, and so I can't, you know, so here you're dealing because people are hurting, or they're wanting to get away from something, and then you're bringing them to the healer, which is Jesus. You became, you know, his help. What a great story about that. And I know in your church, there's many stories like that. I mean, of that young lady who now, you know, went from having kids from men she didn't know, uneducated drug dealer or drunk, coming to church in pajamas. And now she's a college educated, you know, godly woman who is an ordained minister. That, you know, it's like Hollywood got nothing on reality. Right. I mean, look at your story. Hollywood has nothing on it. Even, you know, tell me that story about how, you know, I know your building had burned down, and we have a mutual friend, Bishop Gregory Holly. Tell me a little bit about that story about how you stood there and watched your building just, you know, engulf in flames, man.
It was January of 2009, January the 11th. That's a date stamped in my brain.
January 11th, okay.
I get a call from the local police department, get to the church quick. I get down there, and there are firefighters with hoses, and they're, you know, fire's coming out of the top of the roof, and they have they took axes to the doors because we didn't have keys for them. You know, you usually put a knock box with the key for the fire department so they don't have to break down your door. And we didn't have that. The building was too old. And they took axes to the doors, chopped the doors down. And I mean, the building is full of water. The roof is, you know, flames are going up through the roof. And I just stand there just in shock. It's like, oh my God, what is going to happen? And I called Bishop Holly. And
now, how did the fire start? How did the fire start? Did they ever find it out?
The forensic investigation, they did. They said that the building was really an old building, in fact, built in 1938. But they had added along the way a central air or heating unit, and they had put the flume right next to a 2x6 up above the ceiling line. You couldn't see it from inside. So it was a really tight crawl space. So I'd never crawled in there and seen the issue. Didn't know we had an issue, and the fire investigator said that board was right next to the flume for the heater, and it was January, and it's super cold here, and I had turned the heat on the night before to like 65, because it's going to be in the 30s, so I put the heat on around 60. It's not an uncommon practice. Turn the heater on the night before so it would keep the building at least at 65. That way, when we came to church the next morning, we wouldn't have so far to take it. Because if you left it off the way it was insulated, that you'd be 30 degrees inside the building. And so I'd left the heater running, set at 65 so it would keep the building warm overnight and be ready for in the morning. And the fire investigator said at some point this board had been charring, probably said for many years, and until it had become like charcoal. And that night, leaving the heater on, it just finally gave up and burst into flames. And it was in the room where we had the fire, our telephone wires. So it burned all the telephone wires, so it never sent a signal to the fire department. We had a sprinkler system and everything. And so the alarm didn't go off, the wires were burned in half. And the only thing that kept it from burning completely down was a police officer had driven by, and we had a church van parked right there by the building. He thought the van was on fire because he saw flames coming out. Then he began to investigate and found that it was actually the building on fire. He called the fire department. They went in and tried to put the fire out. But it was a mess. But I called Bishop Holly. I was just, man, I was dumbfounded, just in my shock, and, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. And at church time, people started showing up. This is Saturday night. On Sunday morning, I'm standing on the parking lot watching them put the fire out, and it became close to church time. People started arriving for church, and we just finally just met in the parking lot and had a prayer meeting. I sent everybody home. But I'd called Bishop E.L. Holly, and he said, don't do anything, don't make any decision, don't sign anything, I'll be there tomorrow afternoon. So Monday afternoon, he showed up with one of his guys that was actually an insurance guy. He was an adjuster for an insurance company. It was on his board, and name was Bill Modisette. He just passed away last year, went home to be with the Lord. Great man. We really are so blessed that he came out. I didn't know anything about insurance, and the first insurance adjuster got there and said, Pastor, we'll have you back up in no time. You know, 3 weeks, we'll patch this up. We'll fix this. We had three trusses burned in half. Trusses were burned in half that hold the roof up. And he's like, oh yeah, we'll fix this up. We'll have you back up and going in 3 weeks. And when Bill got there, he said, I need a copy of your policy. He took our policy and came back later. He said, Pastor, you have a Cadillac policy. They've been selling you stuff for years. You have umbrellas on top of umbrellas. They're not going to patch anything. They're going to build this building back. It's going to be brand new and up to code. And that's exactly what happened.
Wow.
Because of that relationship and connection, we ended up completely redoing the building. We even had an umbrella that they paid for us to lease somewhere while it was being built. So our insurance company didn't like it, but they certainly did. We were blessed to have a good insurance company. They paid for us to lease a building, 10,000 square feet, while we were under construction. It took 2 years to get it fixed. But the Lord blessed us to have what we thought was a catastrophe ended up being a blessing. And the building was completely brought up to code, new everything, wiring, plumbing, everything was brought up to code. Because once we opened up the building, the city came in and said, oh no, all of this has, you know, this building was built in 1938. It has to be brought up to code. And so they required that. The insurance company didn't like it. They're like, well, I had a policy for that. It covered it. And so the Lord blessed us with a completely brand new building.
So it's a good thing it was caught on fire.
Well, yeah, no, at the time I thought it was terrible, but
sure.
2 years later, we have our opening service, and wow, what a great day that was. And we got to redesign it a little bit, and just, it's a great place.
We can spend hours talking about your life because it's so interesting, because you've gone through, are there any, maybe I don't like to say failures, but were there any things in your life? I mean, I know coming through, you know, going from being a drug user, a drug dealer to, to becoming a minister and a healer of people. Are there any failures in your life or challenges in your life where you thought, man, you know, and what did you learn from it? You know, if you have any stories like that, are there any big failures? Because, you know, oftentimes we say like this is that, you know, when we have successes, you actually learn more from failures or challenging moments in your life. I mean, I can tell you off the top of my head, I know of one, and it was about the same time as when 9/11 happened. But, you know, are there any situations or stories you could share that, you know, that was challenging to you and you thought, man, I don't know how I'm going to make this. And what did you learn from it?
Yeah, I've got the major life event that happened to me. I've been here pastoring for a number of years. And in 1999, my wife, who I thought would we grow old together. I envisioned that someday sitting on the front porch, you know, with my false teeth in, hair gray, you know, grandkids running around. That's the way I saw it. I mean, we were loved each other. We had two children. In 1999, she passes away, November of 99. Mm. She'd gone to the hospital for an appendicitis attack, and there were some mistakes made, and she ended up dying. And I'm left with these two little kids, and my little girl, she's obviously a grown woman now, but she was 9 and her brother was 7.
Oh my. Formative years for kids. They need their mother.
Yeah, it was crazy time, and I just, obviously my life hit the wall. I've been pastoring here for a number of years now, and we had given our life to God. We'd go anywhere, do anything He said. And obviously there was all the feelings you have. God, what happened? Why did you let this happen? How could this happen to us? Because I'd always been bulletproof, invincible. I mean, it takes a lot to move your family across the country, away from family and friends. I would do anything for God. If He had said go to Africa, I'd have been packing and going to Africa. Whatever it took, I was willing to go anywhere, do anything. That old song that says, Lord, I'll go where you want me to go.
Yes.
Do what you want me to do, over mountains or sea. I mean, I believe that. I love God that much. God so radically changed my life. My life was no longer my own. And then all of a sudden, everything slams to a stop. The church had been doing great. In fact, that Easter before she passed, we had 386 people for Easter Sunday. I know that's usually the biggest Sunday of the year for churches, but we were packed wall to wall, and church was thriving and booming, and people were getting saved.
A town of Los Angeles. That's a lot of people.
Well, that was probably about 18,000 people at the time, 19 maybe. And then she was just gone. I went to the hospital and they said, we're sorry, she died. It was that year is pretty much a blank for me because I was in such tremendous depression, I could say. I was still trying to pastor. I had friends that would say, you should go, you should leave and, get some help and, make some steps to, I'm like, why would I leave? This is my family. This is my kids. My children are here. My family's here. It's my church. They're like my family. And so I stayed and just kept going. And I had a pastor that called me one day and I said, help me with something. I don't feel nothing. I'm preaching. I don't feel nothing. I don't feel God. I'm just trying to do what I know is right and keep doing that. And he told me, he said, don't stop. In the valley, never stop. Always keep walking. Because if you keep walking, you'll walk out the other side. And there's another mountaintop coming. And the feeling will come back. Just be faithful and do what you know is right. And so I listened. I took that advice. And it was exactly a year later, the same month, November. And the Lord, it's like He turned the light switch on. I'd gone to a conference over in San Jose at Jubilee Christian Church. And there was a preacher preaching. And she was preaching on when God heals your heart. I'm just sitting there weeping. It's like 4,000 people there. I'm out in the middle of the congregation. I'm just sitting there weeping. Just, Lord, I need this new heart she's talking about. I need you to heal my heart. And I could hear her preaching in the background. I'm just sitting there weeping. My eyes are closed. All of a sudden, I feel a hand on my chest. Just touch my chest. And I look up, and she's still preaching, and she's walking away. She had come down off the platform, out to in the congregation, and just laid her hand on my chest, just like straight on my chest, and then walked off. She got back to the platform and she turned around and she said, look right at me. She said, God is healing your heart. He's giving you a new heart. And the heart God has given you is God's heart. And God's heart believes every word that God says. And then she just kept preaching, just went on like nothing happened. But when that happened, it was like someone turned a light switch on in a dark room. The lights came back on. And I came home to the church the next weekend, and they were like, our pastor's back. He's back. I was fired up. I was encouraged, and looked around, and there was a lot of people had gone, which I understand. There, you know, it was a hard thing for the church, you know, because my wife and I were partners in ministry. She preached with me. She worked with me. We were definitely co-pastors, and the church had dwindled down because I was a mess, to be honest with you. I know I was a mess. But God restored my faith, my confidence. And there's a number of lessons that I learned during that time. One day, during that grief, I was sitting on the kitchen floor crying. My kids were gone, in the house alone, and to where there were no more tears. And those of you that have experienced grief probably know what I'm talking about. But there were no more. It didn't even sound human anymore. The sounds that were coming out of me was like a dog howling. My heart was so broken. I was crying, no more tears, but it just sounded just like howls coming out. It just hurt so bad, sitting on the kitchen floor, heartbroken. And the Lord spoke to me and said, now you know how I feel. I know that's not why God did this, and I don't think God did this. There were some errors made by doctors. And anytime you go to a hospital, you take that chance. They're human beings and they make mistakes. So I learned not to blame God through that. I begin to see that God, yes, He is in charge of everything, but He has put us in control of this world. And every human being has a choice. And the choices people make affect you, and the choices your loved ones make affect you. It's not God that causes it to happen. It's a result of human choice, human error, human mistake, and the result of a fallen world. And so in that moment, He said, now you know how I feel. And the revelation came with that. And he reminded me, I was the first one to ever lose somebody I loved to death. When Adam and Eve sinned, they were my children. When they sinned, death came into the world. And I lost my loved one. I lost my kids, my children, to death. It was never supposed to be. I lost my... He said, now you know how I feel. And he said, now you know why I did what I did. I could not stand to lose them forever. So I made a way to reunite myself with my children, to see them again.
Wow.
To have a relationship with them again. Because that's the hardest part. After someone you love dies, especially a spouse or even mom and dad, when they die, it's the fact that you can't hear their voice again. Sometimes you just want to hear their voice so bad. To hear their voice again would mean anything. You miss them, their relationship, the connection you had, all of that, you miss that. And your heart just hurts from the absence of them being in your life. And when I saw that that's how God felt about humanity, and that he couldn't live with it. He couldn't live with the absence of relationship with Adam and Eve. When you understand that God so loved the world, He so loved humanity, He gave His only begotten Son to defeat death and once and for all take away the sting of death. So if you know Jesus, you never have to worry about death. You never have to fear death, because He's conquered death and made a way for us to be reunited, that death would not be permanent. God says, now you know why I care so much. Suddenly I was like, I know why God's so passionate about reaching those that don't know Him, because He doesn't want to lose them to death. Because after Jesus, death is no longer permanent.
Right. Wow. That's a powerful lesson. Thank you for sharing that. I've heard your stories, but I've never heard that understanding. I don't think I've ever heard you share that part of it. So what did you learn? I guess one of the things I heard you say you learned from it is just
keep on walking. When you're in the valley, don't stop. just keep doing what you know is right. Because there's, you know, there's a temptation to mask the pain. I went to doctors and they said, you know, we can give you a pill and you won't feel so bad. We understand what you're going through. It's loss. It's normal. I feel all those emotions, and it's everything from disbelief and shock when it first happens to the anger you feel that they're gone, and then just the deep sadness, and then sometimes even depression. I went through all those stages, and you know, I did for just a short few weeks. The doctor said, "Here, you need to take this medication," and I took it, and it was just horrible. I didn't like it at all. It shut you down. You didn't feel anything. And so I stopped taking it right away because I just couldn't. I didn't see, you have to feel. You're supposed to feel all those emotions. And oftentimes, especially here in American culture, we don't want to experience any pain. But it's normal to feel sad. It's normal to feel angry. It's normal to feel depressed. You have to pass through that. Don't just mask it. Sometimes people mask it with alcohol or even drugs or prescription drugs, medication. Sometimes it's doing other things, but you should try to find a way to make the pain go away. And really the only way through the pain is to feel the pain.
The only way through the pain is, oh, wow. Okay.
Feel the pain and don't stop. Just keep doing what you know is right. Keep trusting God, because he will bring you out the other side. You will come out the other side.
I mean, I know when that happened, you were a young man. I mean, what, you were 30?
She was 30. I was 34.
Wow.
Yeah, 34 years old.
You're very young. And now you're happily married, and it's wonderful because, you know, we did a podcast with Susan Young.
Yes.
And she went through tragedy, and I mean, I see y'all, you're just happy. You're traveling, you know, go through Montana and Wyoming, and you know, I mean, when I'm with you, I just feel joy because you both have such great joy being together.
You know, both of us lost, you know, she lost her husband, he passed away. I lost my wife. The Lord brought us together. It was like a total surprise. We kind of found each other trying to help each other.
Found each other trying to help each other. I like that.
I had a prophet call me after my wife passed away, probably like a month after she passed away. He said, "The Lord's going to bring you a new wife."
Oh, my.
Like a month. I'm like, just shut up. Leave me alone.
Right.
He's like, "No, the Lord's supposed to pray." He said, "I was praying for you this morning. The Lord told me to tell you this, so I had to call you."
Oh, my goodness.
He said, "The Lord's going to give you a new wife. She's going to be double joy."
Double joy.
And so I call Susan my double joy.
Yeah, I never knew your first wife.
She was awesome. She was an amazing woman. And here's the thing, after she passed, I thought I would never love again. I could never love anybody else. I'd given myself completely to her. And what I learned through that is you never stop loving that person. And God, the love that you have when God gives you a new relationship is a different level. In fact, it's not the same. It's different. And I don't love my first wife any less. When I found Susan, she's become such a part of me now. And both of us, having known what it is to lose, we're careful with each other. We don't take each other for granted.
Man, that's so good, bro.
You know what it's like to not have anybody. And when we found each other, we were just so happy. And God blessed us. She became my double joy, just like the prophet told me, even though at the time I didn't want to hear it.
Right, right.
And I wasn't expecting her. It just, you know, God brought her into my life. And just here it is. And it was after I came out of that in November. We started dating in like January the next year, like 2 months later. And it was just a crazy time. But the Lord just bonded us together. And we have such an appreciation for one another. I mean, we're not perfect. Nobody is. And then we had to blend a family. She had two children. I had two children. That's another whole story. Learning how to blend a family together. And
through tragedy, literally. I mean, because
you know,
his kids,
children lost a dad, a father, and your children lost a mother. So not only are you both dealing with tragedy and loss, they're dealing with tragedy and loss.
Yeah, it was a crazy time. A lot of great stories and a lot of great lessons learned. But I'm so blessed.
What would you say right now? You know, I know we're limited on time because you have to go to another meeting. But what would you say right now to a young man or a young lady? You know, what 3 to 5 words of advice, words of wisdom that we could sit here. Like, I know your life a little bit and some of the things you've gone with, you know, with loss and dealing with things. You know, we haven't even touched on one of your great passions of hunting, you know. I love hunting, and I know you do too, and I don't get to do it anymore, but, you know, and you live out there and you go duck hunting. We haven't even talked about that. But
in the morning. I can't hardly wait. Season just opened, and I'll be in the duck blind in the morning about 5:30.
Oh. So tell me,
as they say in Louisiana, we're going to get them duck for sure.
So what are, like, maybe right now, 3 to 5 things, maybe 3 things you could say, give advice to a young person, you know, starting out life, or even someone that gone through loss, you know, of a loved one. What would it be right now?
Well, first thing, the best advice I could give anyone is seek the kingdom of God. Seek to know Jesus.
Seek to know Jesus.
Not religion, not a denomination. Seek to know Jesus.
Okay.
That was my passion that drove me and has brought me to where I am. I would read the scriptures, not to just say I read a scripture, but I wanted to see Jesus.
Yes.
Let me see Jesus. I want to know Jesus.
Awesome.
So seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And God is always faithful. He will add to you what you need if you will seek him. He will tell you what to do and how to go if you will seek him. Put him first in your life. Second, I would say always be a learner. Never think you know it all. I read a lot. And people I see that are successful, they're always reading, always learning. They're going to workshops and seminars and adding to their life. No matter whatever level you're on, there's still room to grow. And so always be a learner. And as they say, there's, you know, that saying that says leaders are always learners. It's really true. I get alarmed when I have, especially men tend to say this to me, and well, I haven't read a book since high school. I'm like, I'm sad for you, you know, seriously, because they're, you know, you should all, and now everything's audible. You have no excuse for not getting good information. And there's so much information available. Always be learning. If you have a passion or a hobby or whatever it is, there's stuff you can learn about it. So always be a learner and always trust the Lord. He will be faithful. He will bring you through. So I think that's the advice that I would give them. Always put first God first in your life.
We're going to have to do another podcast because we still need to talk about hunting.
And fishing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I talk to you anytime.
What gets you up in the morning still? What keeps Doug Young, Pastor Doug Young, Bishop Doug, you know, what gets you up, man, every day, just, you know, with a spring in your step? Because you're always, to me, you're always joyful. You're so, you know, easy to get along with. I mean, I've been with you several times, days. I mean, last time I was out there with you, I was like gone a week. And, you know, there's some, and I say this and it's funny, and you recognize, there's some people that, when you're with them, they just wear you out, you know? And then there's some people that, man, I wish I had more time. You know, I wish I was with him all day. And I've been with you all day. And, you know, you're just so easy to get along with. And I really enjoy that. So what gets you going, man? What keeps you going?
I think, you know, I don't think it's changed. I think the same thing that drove me early on and still does is my first passion, and that is to win people to Jesus. There's nothing like talking to someone who's hungry and who's maybe just confused and lost, and you begin to talk to them about what God's done for you, and you share your story, because that's your most powerful testimony. It's not about quoting scriptures and not about how much theology you know. It's really about what has Jesus done for you, and being a witness. I think that's my that's what drives me. Everything that I do is centered around I have connections because I saw pastors in my life. You become so isolated with the church culture that you no longer have any friends that don't know Jesus. Yeah. And I think a pastor should always be setting the example for the church. So I have intentional relationships outside of the church for the purpose of reaching people for Jesus.
Yes.
But I think even as a pastor, I should still be trying to share my story and still trying to be a witness for Christ and lead people to know Jesus.
I agree.
So it's you have to be intentional and make a decision. That means that I don't go to just church functions. There are times that I'm at local area functions where we go and we're bumping elbows, and most of the people there are in dire need of Jesus.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not worried about being contaminated. They're not, what they're doing is not going to affect me. I don't have to do what they do. In fact, they need to see me living out my testimony. Right. And so I think that's what drives me. It still does. I'm still an evangelist at heart, even though I've pastored now here 27 years. I'm still an evangelist. And so that's my passion, that I may lead souls to Christ.
Well, I mean, you've done a great job going from 18, because your church is well over 18 people right now. I know that you're so busy. So what's a normal day off the cuff? Like if you had a day off, which you rarely do, I mean, you've got hundreds and thousands of people coming to see you, but you know, what is your favorite thing to do if you had like a day off?
Oh, wow. Well, I think everybody needs a hobby. I love to hunt and fish. So right now I'm getting ready for deer season. Just confirmed that I'm going to be going to Arkansas to hunt whitetails deer.
Arkansas. Okay.
With my buddy from college. We came through college together, graduated the same year, and we've reconnected in the last few years. And so I hunted last year with him, and he just invited me to come back again this
awesome.
Year. And so I practice every day. I take some time every day to shoot my bow in the front yard. I bought me a target, so I have it here at the house. I practice my bow shot, because last year I missed. This year I'm not going to miss. But I, you know, doing things like and so when I have time, I'm out there shooting my bow. I garden in the backyard. I enjoy hanging out with my friends and both churched and unchurched. We always have a good time together. And so, yeah, typical day. Most of the times when it's a day off, my wife and I take advantage of that and go try to get out of town and have a date. Love the ocean. So where I live.
I love you.
Where I live, I'm only 90 minutes from Monterey Bay, California, right on the ocean. And then it's 90 minutes to the top of Yosemite National Park. So we're right dead center of California. And so pretty much an hour and a half to 2 hours in any direction, I can go to a major gorgeous place. And so we'll just get up in the morning and drive over to the coast. And we've got a little spot on the beach where we just go, we call it a sand seminar. We go have a sand seminar. dig your feet in the sand and read a book and just listen to the waves and the seagulls. And
you, and that's why you and I get along. That's what, like, yeah. My, you know, just do nothing.
You got to be close to the ocean. Yeah. And then that, or go to the mountains and, you know, hike through the forest. And we try to do things like that. That's our getaway is usually the ocean, usually the beach.
Well, the last time I was out there, you took me down to Monterey, and then we drove that coastline, and you know where Pebble Beach Golf Course is. Oh my goodness.
17-mile drive.
That's it. 17-mile drive. Oh my goodness.
Beautiful.
That
is some of the most magnificent homes.
Yes. I think
we had Susan, Pastor Susan, calculate the payments on some of those homes. I think some of them were like $300,000 a month in mortgage payments.
Insanity. It's a little too rich for my blood. For
right, sure. A little bit out of our pay grade. So,
a little range.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And, for your time, and I know you have another meeting. Thank you for, you know, spending this much time with me. We're gonna have to definitely get you back and do some greater, more stories. But thank you, brother. And I want to tell the audience, if you're out there in the Central Valley of California, Los Banos, you need to visit our Father's house. You know, and see Pastor Doug there and his wife, Susan. And they're just tremendous people. I know one thing, if I lived in that area, I'd be coming out there, even if it took me an hour to drive, because what he's doing, the community, the love that you feel, it's great. And so for those that are listening, if you're looking for a church and you're that, you know, you're even close to that area, you need to visit them and come visit Pastor Doug Young out there. And, you know, I know that your life will be transformed because, you know, listen to his story, listen to the people's stories. And I know he'll be saying, he'll look forward to seeing you. So thank you for listening. Thank you again, Bishop Doug Young.
Thank you, my brother. What a pleasure. I always love talking to you. Love you and respect you. What a great man of God, and your family is just awesome. And always love to be with you.
Thank you, man. Have a great day.